If you would like to follow along in our study tonight, we will be in Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and 12. Very different than this morning. We studied, or at least we read, many scriptures this morning, especially when talking about eternity. Tonight, we probably will just be in this one place. We want to walk through this section and what Solomon says. So if your Bible's open to Ecclesiastes 11, that would be great. Here's a reminder of what we finished with this morning. We had studied verses in the New Testament on four different categories of time. And ultimately, at least for myself, in the end, we ought to be thinking about eternity all the time. When we pray, we think about the eternal throne room of God. We think about our eternal purpose, His eternal love, and our eternal home. Now, in the midst of that, you have to think about these two other things. There are four times in which you might occupy your mind, and sometimes it has to be yesterday. Remember lessons that you've learned. As I said this morning, biblically speaking, there are two reasons to look back to yesterday. To find bad stuff and make sure you left it there, and to find good stuff and try to do it again. So sometimes it's good to look back and learn. And tomorrow, I mean, you got a plan. School starts for many tomorrow, and we have a lot of scheduled events, but for the most part, we want to keep those small. And then we finish with this. The biggest thing, hopefully, the biggest thing you've been focused on today is today. Being at worship, being an encourager, planning to do the right thing, making the most of it. And this is the way that I try to live my life, but I got to thinking a couple of days ago. You know, this isn't going to be very optimistic if someone is here tonight and they don't tend to enjoy days as they live them. Maybe you're one of those people who's always talking about that daily grind. Do we have any daily grinders out there? Where are you, daily grinders? Oh, another day. Got to grind through a whole nother set of circumstances and tasks and jobs and difficulties. If you're a daily grind person, the idea of putting the day in the middle of your life and getting excited about it may feel out of reach. We got any working for the weekenders? Raise your hand if you're one of those. You know who I'm talking about. Just trying to get to the weekend. That's pretty sad if you think about it. To waste 5 days during the week just trying to get to two. And then resetting and doing that again. So I thought it might be worth talking about how can we have a more optimistic view of Mondays. That's the one you got coming up if you wake up in the morning. I don't know how you feel about that. But maybe if we have a more optimistic view of today as we're living it, we'll get a lot more out of it. Well, it's kind of ironic that the help we're going to get is in Ecclesiastes because it's sort of a downer book. Do you remember that from studying Ecclesiastes? Solomon writes these two books that we read back to back. The first one is Proverbs. Proverbs is very positive. It's very hopeful. It's got all these great semi-guarantees in it. Like if you're a righteous person, you're going to do great. And if you're a fool, you're going to fail. And there are all these great assurances about do the right thing and it'll all work out. Do the wrong thing and it won't. And then he gets into Ecclesiastes and he says, oh, by the way, all of that can be completely thrown out the window at any moment. All those basic assurances of life, those usual, typical truths, all of a sudden the wise guy can come in last and the fool can win. There are all these uncertainties in this life. And so by the time you get to Ecclesiastes 11, you're just kind of washed out. Like, why should I even be trying? If it turns out life is filled with inequities and unfairness and injustice, and it is, then how am I supposed to get up when today comes and be optimistic? Well, Ecclesiastes 11 is a perfect place to study the answer to that question. And so we're going to do that for just a few minutes tonight. Let me read for you the first six verses. You ought to be in Ecclesiastes 11, and we're going to read the first six verses, and you're going to see some recommendations and also some life truths. So let's read it together. Cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to seven or even to eight, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. If the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth. And whether a tree falls toward the south or toward the north, wherever the tree falls, there it lies. He who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. Just as you do not know the paths of the wind, and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. Sow your seed in the morning, and do not be idle in the evening, for you do not know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed, or whether both of them alike will be good. Now the imagery here is going to be sowing seed in a field, and we'll pick up on that in a minute, but first I want to start with stuff you don't know. We're definitely going to need a bigger boat for that. There are so many things we don't know. It reminds me of James 4. You do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. Talk about an understatement. There are all kinds of things you can't control. And I want you to notice here that Solomon is very honest about that by telling you four things you probably don't know and you're probably never going to know. So let's take a look at them so we can be clear on that. The first one comes in verse 2. Divide your portion to 7 or even to 8, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. Here's the first thing you don't know. You don't know when misfortune is going to befall you. You can put in your best effort. You can be as wise about it as possible. You can take all the right steps, and misfortune can just fall upon you in a moment's notice. He said, it's no guarantee that's going to happen, but the truth is, and I hate to say it, but failure is always an option. Because misfortune is this random thing in this earth that sometimes happens. You say, is this supposed to be an optimistic chapter about being active? Yes, it is. But we're starting with some sobering truths. He said, I'm going to tell you four things. The first one is, the truth is, no matter how wise you are about it, sometimes misfortune is just going to slap down right in front of you and stop your progress. Here's the second thing. He comes in a little while later, and he says in verse 5, you do not know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman. This reminds me a little bit of Job's conversation with God. You guys remember that conversation? Where Job is like, I want to know what's going on, and I want to know why all this is happening, and I'm looking for answers. And God said, all right, fine. You just answer a couple questions for me, and then I'll answer a couple questions for you. And he lays out 60-something questions on Job. Job, how's that work? And how does that work? And how does that fit together? And tell me how all this happens. And if you can tell me, I'll tell you. And what did Job say? I'm an idiot. I don't know anything. And you know what? Just get ready for that. Because there are lots of things in life that you don't know how they work. How the bones are formed in the mother's womb. How the paths of the wind operate and what affects them and how you can predict them and figure them out. There are lots of things in your, if you're one of those people who needs to know exactly how it all works and have it under full, dissected, and described control before you do something, you're not going to do very many things because you do not know. He said, I'll tell you something else, verse 5. Not only do you do not know what's going on and how it works, but he's really building to this, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. Well, he got us there. Even if I'm someone who has 99% certainty that I'm going to succeed on this thing I'm going to try. It's going to work out. Even if I'm someone who figures the whole thing out and has it all dissected in a book, I still will never know exactly what the mind of God is doing. Well, sure, I mean, you have providential things like the gospel and salvation, but the daily practices of the will of God, so you have to understand that. You may be all excited about something and active in it, and God in heaven might be thinking, I don't want him doing that. That's not my will, and then it will be stopped. You do not know what God is doing in every way, shape, or form. And I'll give you one more. In verse 6, he says, sow your seed in the morning, and do not be idle in the evening, for you do not know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed. Let's end with something positive. You don't know. It may work out great. I should have probably opened with that. It may be great. You may do this, and it may change your life forever. He actually starts with the opposite thing. He says, you may think it's the greatest thing. It may fall flat. You may not understand it. You may not understand God. But the truth is, sometimes it may work out awesome. So here I am looking at this list in verses 1 through 6, and I'm thinking, how can I be optimistic every day with all this uncertainty? If I'm totally in the dark on everything beyond my field of view, but as I mentioned to you this morning, this list does not petrify me, it liberates me. It's kind of like kids. Kids don't know a lot about what's going on, but they can see what's right in front of them. They can go for it. They're not concerning themselves with all the things they don't know. They just like what they see and they go for it. Well, ultimately in this text, I'm liberated by the fact that I'm ignorant. I'm happy about that. I don't need to know everything to do the right thing. I don't need to understand how it's all going to work out to do something wise today. All I need to do is stay focused on what's happening right now and stop trying to control everything else. So what you're going to see in this text is all of these things will pretty much always be true, but here is the advice. Three things. Number one, he said, even with all of that uncertainty, he opens like this. Cast your bread on the surface of the waters. Let me see if I can explain to you what this imagery is. Imagine that you are sowing wheat seed into fields, and that's the way you're going to feed your family. That's your whole future in your life. You need crop. And so you got all the seed in the bag, and you walk out to the field, and you're ready to sow, and the field has 3 inches of water in it. I don't think that's good for sowing wheat in a field. It's 3 inches deep. Turns out it's been raining for 2 weeks, and you've got all this water, and you're looking out in the field, and you're thinking, there's water in the field. I don't know if this works. If I sow this seed and it rains one more day, what happens to my seed? It's all going to be ruined. If I sow this seed and it stops raining for a month, it's all going to dry up. So you're looking at these imperfect, it's kind of like our lives, guys. I feel like my life is a wheat field with 3 inches of water in it, you know? Like it's all there to do, but there's always some reason to look at it and say, look at this. This is not perfect. This may not work out. He said, you're right. You're never going to know. You're never going to know if it's going to rain for 4 more days straight and wash all your seed away. Or you're not going to know whether there's some drought that comes in and ruins everything. So here's what you do. You cast your seed on the water. What's he saying? Do it anyway. Be optimistic, be hopeful. And I would just say this to you guys. If it's the right time to do the right thing, do the right thing. That's James 4. James 4 said, you do not know whether you'll even be around tomorrow. So he who knows the right thing to do, James 4:17, and does not do it, to him it is sin. You ever come across a situation where it was the right time to do the right thing, but you didn't do it, and someone asked you about that? Hey, you know, that would have been the right time to invite that person to church. That would have been the right time to become a Christian. That would have been the right time to say that thing you needed to say, but you didn't do it. You ever had anybody respond without excuses? Me neither. It's always, well, I know I didn't do it, but there was 3 inches of water in the field. Did you see the water in the field? I thought I saw a storm cloud coming, and I figured if I do this now, it'd be a total waste, so I'm going to do it another time. If that guy, on the day when it's time to sow the seed, talks himself out of it, his family will starve. So number one is, you go ahead and cast your bread on the water. And then he said, not only that, but you cast it all over the place. Now this is really something. You know, here's what I would probably do. I'd say, I don't know, the weather doesn't look good and the probability looks a little bit low. I think I'll just cast it in this one little field and see what happens. And maybe if the weather's just right and the wind is just right, it'll start to grow. The problem is, even if you're right, you've not grown enough wheat to feed your family. So it wasn't really worth doing, was it? If it's the right thing to do and you're going to do it, he said, you spread it around. You spread it into 7 fields. You spread it into 8 fields. You say, I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do and I'm going big. I'm spreading the word. Because maybe there'll be some misfortune with some, like these 2 fields, but fortune in others. You got to spread it out. So what we're saying is, don't leave here and wake up tomorrow. I'm going to give you some examples at the end and think, you know what, he's right. I've been putting off doing the right thing. I'm going to do it. But I think I'm going to do it on this really small little tester scale. We got a lot more faith than that, and we need to show that faith. If it's the right thing, you spread it around and divide your portion. And then you get out there and you work that field. I see this guy, I don't know if they had rubber boots back then, but I see this guy going, okay, I did it. I can't believe I just did that. I took all my seed, everything my family has to live on, and I cast it into every field I have in 3 inches of water. I don't know what's going to happen to that seed. And so he just goes home and waits a month to see what happens. Well, it's not going to work. I see the guy putting on whatever kind of rubber boot moccasins he can get and going out there every day and working that soaked field, raking it and moving it and tending it and diverting the water. And that's the idea in verse 6. You don't know. Lots of things. So sow your seed in the morning and do not be idle in the evening. For you do not know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed or whether both of them alike will be good. How sad would it be? How sad would it be for someone to finally go out there and take advantage of today and do the right thing? Oh, it was hard, but you did it. Did the right thing. And I mean, you spread it out. You told everybody about it. But then you decided that it just wasn't worth your time, and so you backed up and waited for the crop to grow. And all that great early momentum amounts to nothing. He said, no, you go out there every day and you work that field because you never know, it may grow a crop and it may feed your family for good. So here's what I would say about that in terms of for you and for me. What I would say about that, first of all, is you got to live with all this, and that's just the way it is. Got to live with it. But here's what I think God's people should be doing. If you want Monday, let's say tomorrow becomes today and you get up and you get to live another day in the name of the Lord, and you get to pray about eternity and make the most of that day, why don't you start something good? Why don't you grab some seed in your pocket? Because today is the day to do what is right and go out and do it. If that thing is the spreading of the gospel, go invite somebody to study the Word of God. If that thing is to encourage someone who needs your help, today is the right day. Go out. There's always 100 excuses for why. Nah, it's not the right time. It's not the right day. They're not in the right place. There's always going to be water in the field, guys. Or it'll be dry. It'll either be too dry or too wet. It's the way life is. Question is, who's going to do it anyway? You want a little optimism tomorrow? Let me just ask you something. What could you see yourself doing tomorrow, which will be today very soon, Lord willing, that is about an optimistic view of something that I need to start that I've been putting off? But don't get scared. Don't hide it in a corner somewhere. If you're going to start something good and you're going to give it the best chance to succeed, you need to spread it around. If you said, I'm going to become more hospitable, I think I'm going to have somebody from church over and get more integrated in the church, go ahead and invite like 5 families. Just go for it. Get the big long Subway at Walmart. Freshly made, pretty good. If you're going to do something good, don't hide in the corner. You know, just in case it doesn't work out. Just in case there are diminished returns. People who believe their effort will render diminished returns always receive diminished returns. Does that statement make sense? People who hide what they're doing because they don't think it's going to work, they're just really proud of themselves for trying it, it doesn't work, and they stop trying things. Let me tell you about Christians who excel. They get up every day excited about trying something in the name of God, and they're ready to spread the news. I was thinking about some of this evangelism stuff a few of us are starting to work on. We've been spreading it around. We've got you guys turning in addresses. We've got about 30 addresses now, people we're going to go see in the next couple of weeks. Hey, if we think it's the right thing to do, who knows if one family across the street will respond or one of your friends will come to church. But I know this, if we spread it out and really go for it, we got a lot better chance at teaching somebody the gospel. We need a little more boldness. And then, guys, stay committed to things. Again, I think some people are just really proud of themselves because they tried something. We got to be better than that as Christians. It's not just about trying something and about letting people know about it. I've got to work it. I was reading a book the other day about success in all kinds of things. Success in business, success in the family. And they use a number that kind of scares me a little bit because I don't like to think about the future very much. But they use the number 18 months. Man, that's a big number. That's like a scare. I don't even know what's coming on tomorrow, what's going on. They said, if you really believe in something, you really believe in it, you really believe in it, and you're willing to spread your seed and go all in, and first of all, he talks about if you're not willing to go all in, you're not willing to succeed. You've got to work that thing for about a year and a half to find out what really is God's plan and what really can come out of it. I think that there's instruction here about optimism, and you don't have to know what's going to happen. Don't be like verse 4, watching the wind, so I'm not going to sow, looking at the clouds, so I'm not going to reap. So I guess I thought about tonight, and I was going to give you all these examples I wrote down, but I don't want to do any of that. I just want you, please, to look at that square and pick something. Like, you don't want me to give you something. Pick something. What is something good? It's time to start. How can you go big, spread it wide, tell people, and get others going? And are you willing to give it some time? And see, no excuses, no concerns. Now, move a little further down in chapter 11. One of the things that gets in the way is our attitude. If we go through the right steps, but we don't have a good attitude, we sabotage ourselves even if we're doing the work. If you go out and you work the field, but you have this terrible attitude about it, you don't believe in it's going to work out, it'll affect your effort. So when you get down to verses 9 and following, I want to leave you with three words that start with the letter R. And I want you to think about these words. And in particular, it's for kind of our younger group. And by younger, I mean anybody who still feels like they feel pretty good and you've got vitality and there's a lot of things you can do. God has a message for you. Go with me to verse 9. If this is going to work, number one, rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. That sounds kind of shady, but I don't think it is. Because he goes on to say, yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. One of the things that we need to be better workers in the Lord is we need a grateful, thankful, rejoicing spirit. If you're someone who has good health, if you can get out of bed and enjoy a today and you've got vitality and energy and ability, you got nothing to complain about. And if you fight me on that, I will set you down with about 10 people in the room right now and I'll lock you in a room with them for 10 minutes. And when you get out of that room, you're going to hug my neck and say, take me home. There are people in this room who do not enjoy the rejoicing, exuberant energy and abilities that they once had in their youth. They can still start something and cultivate something and stick with something, but it is very hard to do. There are a lot of health problems and a lot of limitations. And by the way, that's what Ecclesiastes 11 and 12 ultimately is talking about. So if you're someone who still has the energy to be evangelistic, still has the mental ability to teach someone, the opportunity to host people, the chance to be active, we need to be the kind of people who rejoice. If you can think of anything that you're passionate about for God in your heart, do it. Don't wait. Do it. Find what you're passionate about in your heart and do it. If you see something, you're a member of this church, and you see something in this church that you are passionate about making better, what am I about to say? Any guesses? Make it better. Make it better. Well, somebody else will make it better, or I don't know. What if I try to make... Stop. I know you don't know. That's kind of the point. You're never going to know. You don't know if it's going to work or it's not going to work. You don't know what kind of effect it has. I have had some interesting conversations lately in the last 3 months with either people who have visited our church or people who are members of our church, who are typically younger, by the way, under the age of maybe 50, who have fallen away or stopped coming or drifted. And when I ask them, hey, what's going on? Why aren't you as involved in our church? Why aren't you coming? They would say, well, I just see a few things there I don't like. And what do you think I tell them? Why don't you become the change you believe in? Why don't you initiate? Well, nobody invites me to their house. Now, where do you live again? Why don't you invite somebody to your house? Young people, if you've got some energy and ability, don't look at things you don't like and complain about it. Rejoice in the abilities God has given you, the opportunities God has given you, and go out and do something about it. And by the way, I don't care if you're 92. If you feel good, you've got abilities, you've got energy, you're a young person too. That's what he means in this text. People who have abilities. Now, of course, you have to not counter it, but you have to make sure you understand the rest of verse 9. He said, you rejoice in your youth. You be pleasant and happy about who you are and where you are. We need more positivity. Follow your heart. Follow your impulses. But know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. By the way, there's a little bit of your eternity in today. Today, rejoice and do something good, but never take your eyes off of when? Eternity. Never take your eyes off of the fact that one day you're going to face the Lord and one day you're going to give an account for what you did and what you did not do. Both of those things. For following something you should not have followed and for being idle when you should have been active. So number one, if you really want to get going on this, it's not just about a procedure like that or an acknowledgement of facts like that. It's about an attitude of rejoicing in what God has given you. I've been thinking a lot about that. I cannot let a day pass letting waste the energy and opportunity that God has given me to make a difference. Do you know how many people wish they still had that? Wish they could go back and recapture it? For most of us, that day is today. Here's a second thing. This goes right along with it. Verse 10. So remove grief and anger from your heart and put away, New American Standard Version says, pain from your body. Some say evil from your body. I think it's just talking about sin here. There are a couple of different interpretations, but it probably is. Because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting or vain or passing quickly or futile. It is so sad to see young people, young families. Jay, you're still a young man. And so by young, I mean all of us who've got vitality and energy and opportunity and possibilities. I shouldn't have said Jay's name because I'm about to say something negative and I don't mean Jay. All of this, and they just walk around mad about things. Grieving about how somebody did them in the past or some circumstance. You got all the chances in the world to sow the seed of godliness and spread it around to this entire church and community and make it your daily work and purpose. And we're sitting there in a chair mired in the anger of dumb stuff. Like somebody did me wrong and I don't like this and I don't like that. Or maybe even sin in your body. He said, if you've got opportunities to do good, you're only going to do it, verse 10, if you remove grief and anger from your heart. I know in some senses anger will always be there. There's righteous anger. And I also know that grief and sadness and loss will always be a part of who you are. But specifically, if you let grief and anger and sin, three things, grief and anger and sin, evil, if those things in your past are keeping you from pulling the seed out of your pocket, you need to let them all go. You need to let them all go. You can still feel grief, but don't be ruled by grief. You can still be angry or something, but just quit it. And you can still think back on the sin, but you leave it back there. We just can't have a generation of young families dominated by negativity because it will keep the church from growing and the fields from harvest. So number two, he says, first of all, you rejoice in what you've got and who you are and be grateful every day. Level three, gratitude every day. Secondly, you got to get those obstacles out of your, you say, out of my life? No, those are always going to be there. There are always going to be obstacles in your life like people, places, and things. And you don't know how that's going to work out. Now, what I think you need to do is you need to remove the junk in your heart that's blocking you from the light of Jesus and the hope of godly living. Second thing, remove grief and anger. Because, and I think he's getting at this, childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. There will come a time when grief and being upset and burdened in the later years is very, very, very hard to fight. Because you feel it all the time, because you've lost people that you love and who are close to you, and it's very, very difficult. Don't waste the years of your youth when you could be removing those things from your midst. Here's the third thing. Third thing. So I'll tell you what else. Remember, if you're looking for an attitude to take through the rest of today, and if we get another day and that's what it'll be called, if you're looking for the right way to be active in it, rejoice, remove, and remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw when you will say, I have no delight in them. And there's just no way of saying this. Otherwise, this is just talking about extreme old age in this chapter. It's talking about getting to a point where your body doesn't function well, where you don't feel well, where you can't see or hear or move. And it's what happens before many of us, before we get to death. So in the time when you've got that vitality, that mental energy, that opportunity, use it invested in learning about God, in reading about God, in praying to God, in talking about God. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth. Focus on Him, dwell on Him, think on Him. Because number one, in the later years when you're not thinking so clearly, you're going to need all that. All of that you stored up. But more importantly, if we want to see the Lindale Church thrive one generation from now, it will mean that the younger families we have now are invested in remembering God, in learning the stories of God, in talking about God, in worshiping God. And if they think, well, I'm really busy now with my work and school and whatever, and I'm going to remember God later. There are many tragic stories that start that way. And they end with people who never find their way to God again. Remember Him before the days come when you can hardly find any delight. I think it's pretty simple. If there's anything positive in any day of your life, remember God. Remember that He made you, that He provided all these things, and that He is in control. So let's finish with this. I hope that this will help you. You can pick up the chart in the back. It's going to have that eternity picture that we had this morning, yesterday, and today, etc. And then I hope that you'll take this home and just start something good. Start something good. Cast your bread. Have the right attitude. Let go of the stuff you don't know. Don't be paralyzed by that. But I think it's worthy to finish where he finishes, Solomon does, in Proverbs 12, 13, and 14. The conclusion, when all has been heard, when every equity and inequity and plus and minus, young and old, when all the stories have been told, here is the conclusion. Fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Now, you may not like marking in your Bibles, but if you have a pencil, maybe you can give this a go. Beside, if you have a little margin beside verse 13 and 14, you got four options. You ready? Yesterday, tomorrow, today, and eternity. You guys remember that? We talked about that all day long. You got four time frames. Beside verse 13, which one of those four would you write down? Fear God last Thursday? Keep His commandments a week ago? No, that's not it. Tomorrow, start fearing God. Keep His commandments by the weekend. No. Beside verse 13, you write one word, and that word is today. Fear God today. Believe in God today. Remember God today. Remove obstacles to God today. Rejoice in the blessings of God today. Do something good today. Spread it around today and stay committed to it as long as it is called today. Verse 13 is all about today. What about verse 14? For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. By the way, there's a little scary warning here. I think he's going to judge idleness with the same standard as he would activity in the wrong direction. Burying our talent won't help us. We need to be active. But if you were going to write down, remember your options? Yesterday, tomorrow, today or eternity, what would you write down beside verse 14? That's a verse about eternity. The day that God will judge. The beginning of everything where there's no time, no limitations. If we will stay focused on today and eternity, there's just really no limit to what we can do. There's no limit. And all of the unknowns will not be able to distract us from our optimism in God. I just wonder tonight, gotta wonder, as we close this thing, gotta wonder, You know, it just so happens to be today. If you're waiting on today, I like what Josh told me about. Is it the restaurant in Mineola that says free tamales, is it? Free fajitas? Free enchiladas tomorrow. That's cute. Never going to be any free enchiladas, folks. It's always going to be tomorrow. That's great. So good. Well, guess where you are right now? It's today. This is the moment to start something good. This is the moment to spread it around. This is the moment to get committed. This is it. This is what you've got. And what you choose to do now could very well be the most significant contribution to eternity you've ever made. This is the moment you've got. This is the chance you have. You need to become a Christian. Today's the day for that. If you need to restore your walk with God, there'll never be a day like this one. This is the one you've got. Come now as we stand and sing.